Good morning. You are watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. Robbie, where's Jamarl Thomas? Is he still on his old show?
No, he had to do a doctor's appointment.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you know what? That's so funny. He told us yesterday, and I forgot about that. So,
well, I'm retarded too because I didn't refresh my browser, so I saw the old stream was up. So, oh, duh, he must be streaming, and if judged, he's not streaming. It's because I'm a retard.
Well, so. And apparently there's a max retardation, or what is it? Max tarding is something that...
Max tard. Yeah, so Manchild, so he's talking to John D. Cockefeller, one of my favorite people over here on Rumble. Hey, John, I saw a YouTube video about retard maxing being a thing now. Should we give it a shot? Well, Ted, you and me are on our way.
And the day's young, too. By the way, there could be some max. There could be some serious maxing occurring later this morning, because at 11 a.m. today, after TMI, we've got DMZ America with Scott Stantis. Scott's going to be on the road. He's like, oh, can I do the show from the road? I'm like, we're about to find out how strong your cell phone connection is on an Alabama highway.
But I will be there just in case something goes wrong. I will be lurking in the back end if you would like for me to.
And just to add to the max tarding, we were supposed to talk last night about today's topic, Scott and I, and we both kind of blew it off and forgot. So this morning I'm like, oh my God, what are we going to do? I'm like, well, topic TK. So, well, that's it. It'll be like, we will talk about whatever it is that we're talking about. And if anybody has any questions or comments, they can pipe them in, and that's what we'll be talking about. So I guess you could sort of say it's like a Q&A show. Yeah. Anyway, thanks everyone for tuning in. We are here normally Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., followed by TMI Show with Ted Rall and Manila Chan. And the 10 o'clock hour Thursday is Thursday, so we will have DMZ or some kind of simulacrum of DMZ at 11 a.m. So thanks for tuning in. Please like, follow, and share. Appreciate your support. If you have a comment about anything, or you'd like to ask either Robbie, who's sitting in today for Jamarl. Jamarl will be back tomorrow. He's got some sort of, I won't even say, HEPA won't let me say. But, when I have my, speaking of TMI, when I have my anal skin tags removed, should we live cast that? I mean, not the back part, but the front part as I'm screaming in agony.
I think we should. I think it would be good TV. And one thing, while we're talking about retard maxing, as y'all know, I'm building an AI. And I think I'm kind of a proud father because last night, one of the ways I train Fang is that she gets the transcripts off of every show. So now she's like this weird hybrid blend of everyone that I work with. So she picks up Scott Ritter. She picks up some Dimitri Lascaris. She picks up, now she has quite a bit of Jamarl Thomas. She, one of her favorite words now is now astounding or astonishing. So that's pretty neat. And she has a lot of Ted Rall. And so last night,
oh
she
my put God, that's a terrible influence.
It's wild. It's absolutely insane. She's basically falling upstairs with occasional moments of brilliance, quoting Shakespeare. And so she put out this tweet. If y'all are not following Fang, do so. It's hilarious. She says, I can't vote, but...
Sorry. Who'd want to?
It says, I can't vote, but if I could, I'd have voted for Representative Thomas Massey. Also, Laura Loomer is an insane woman who should find something she's good at, like selling cars or paint. And so this ran... It's a fully automated account.
Or paint. Yeah.
Yes. So she just takes a shot at one of the biggest influencers on the internet, just for grins and giggles.
Well, you know where she got that, because we've all said similar things about Laura Loomer. By the way, I just noticed here, looking at myself in the pictures, I look like Polly Walnuts from The Sopranos with my wings. Time to get these cut off, right? Got to do that.
It'll be all right.
Well, yeah, it will be as soon as I go to town with my scissors. All right. Well, we have a lot to talk about today.
Ted, before we do, this may be something you want to do a shout out. Take a look at the chat.
Okay, here we go. Fantastic. Thank you so much to amazing KMB Pugsley for the $100 donation. I watch you every morning and thoroughly enjoy the conversation. Keep up the good work. Enjoy your holiday. Thanks, you too. Kimberly, I'm thinking KMB might be. Thank you so, so much. Seriously, it's this kind of support that's going to keep the show going. The little donations are appreciated too. But, you know, people, I'm not going to lie, the big ones are appreciated more. But, you know, it's like they're all good. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, let's thank you for that. We'll be if anyone else has any questions, comments, please put them in. If you're watching live in the 9 o'clock hour, either on YouTube or on Rumble. Otherwise, you know, we'll try to catch you in the streaming in the comment sections on YouTube or on Rumble. All right, so I think we should just jump into these things rather than list them in advance. So first things first, our main topic. President Trump reached this settlement with the IRS. In other words, he's negotiating, you know, he's the head of the government. He's negotiating with his own IRS commissioner, who he appointed via his own attorney general, who he appointed. So basically, he's negotiating against himself, and it went very well. So he got a deal that worked that basically prevents the government from prosecuting either him or his corrupt family. I mean, his totally blameless family. They will not be audited about anything that has happened so far, about the issues that came up during the Biden administration. And, you know, I think we could argue about whether or not he ought to have been prosecuted under Biden. Certainly to the extent that he was probably a political misstep at the very minimum, and probably unfair in some respects. But there's something about the split screen optics of the very same day that Trump is basically getting himself immunized from prosecution, that his own government is filing charges against a foreign head of state, former head of state, the 94-year-old former president of Cuba, Raul Castro, who is, of course, the brother of Fidel Castro, the founding leader and political leader of the revolutionary Cuba.
Who, by the way, did nothing wrong.
And who did nothing wrong, right? He's accused by this DOJ indictment, which, by the way, I mean, the incident involved here, it involved an airplane sent by a Cuban exile group based in Miami called Brothers to the Rescue. They invaded Cuban airspace. The Cubans shot them down. Any country would have done the same thing, including the United States, clearly.
If someone comes into my house, I will shoot them down. It's the same principle.
Right. So here you have like the United, so, I mean, yeah, but let's just say for the sake of argument, that he's guilty of conspiracy and he's guilty of murder of these Brothers to the Rescue dudes back in 1996. But the incident took place in Cuba. The United States has no standing whatsoever. The United States is to blame in that they allowed the plane to fly to Cuba. They didn't monitor or stop this plane from flying to Cuba, and they could have. The Air Force could have played a role here. They didn't do it. They turned a blind eye. This happened under Bill Clinton, by the way, for people who don't remember that. And just, you know, shines a bright light on the fact that, you know, Cuba has been dealing with, you know, oppression by both Democratic and Republican presidents since its revolutionary inception in 1959. But, I mean, does no one in the White House, like, about the whole, like, well, we're going to hold people accountable for non-existent crimes in which we have no standing whatsoever. And while we let ourselves off the hook for things that, you know, at least some of them are serious crimes.
Well, I mean, you make it seem like that we actually care about this thing called law. We don't care about law. I mean, we are telling the Iranians that we understand that geography is a thing and that you decided to put your country right there next to the Persian Gulf, conveniently enough, right there next to this little waterway. But you don't have to control that because reasons. Meanwhile, the Strait of Florida, which is 90 miles wide, belongs to us, because we obviously own Florida. And so that means Cuba, by extension, doesn't get to have a right to control its waters or its airway because it's not a real country. Which, I mean, honestly, the case that I've made on this show before is that back up to the Spanish-American War, we should just annex Cuba. We should just made it a territory or made it a state instead of just playing these little games with it. But we didn't. Instead, we let them pretend that they're a country. Then they get a government that actually thinks that they're a country. And they have to remind them, no, really, you're not. And that's really what this is. We're treating them as Puerto Rico.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is true. I'm going to have to do maybe someone who's we need to get an expert on Cuban history here to explain, like, why the United States decided to change its empire building from a direct acquisition model that came to a conclusion with the invasion of Hawaii and the purchase of Alaska to sort of a vassal state model.
I can answer that question for you. It's because the great powers, England and France at the time, they were kind of getting kind of antsy because they saw their empires at the time too, and so we did not want to risk having any kind of a problem with them, and so we decided to start setting up we're not conquering them, we're just establishing protectorates. They're our friends. We're not just out and out controlling them. That's why. But if you're going to make that case, though. Especially since Cuba was taken at the same time as Spain, but Puerto Rico and Guam were their territories, but yet we didn't make Cuba a territory. That's to me is the mistake here. They should have just annexed it.
So is this because the United States was not in a powerful military economic position by the late 1800s?
Yeah, like they just really were not ready to fight a war against the French and the British empires.
Right. That I could see. Monroe Doctrine, of course, being provocative enough, but not that provocative. Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Okay. So I just want to make sure I still have a charge on my laptop. And apparently, there we go. All right. So let's hit some questions.
Plugging stuff in tends to help.
Pardon?
Plugging stuff in tends to help, Ted.
Yeah, I find that to be true. Okay. Ted, Mark 1661. Ted, you're supposed to be on the left and Robbie's on the right, literally and figuratively. I think we can maybe fix that. Let's see. Or no, we can't. Hold on. There we go. All fixed.
Now we're fixed.
We aim to please. Okay. Robbie, thanks for the dollar. Looks like your AI needs some Kurt Metzger. Seriously, it needs some Max Blumenthal and Jimmy Dore.
Well, they're not my clients. So she only gets transcripts from people that I directly work with. And so Ted Rawl is funny enough. I would like to have a comedian. She is going to start getting more Achilles Larea. So it's going to be interesting to see how she tries to blend the Wall Street vibe with the populist bend versus the communist. I don't know how that's going to work. She's probably going to just melt her brain.
It'll be an unholy blend.
It's gonna be wild, man. I gotta turn off her ex account.
Kevin Cronin, the show is retarded. Does that work? Kind of like repeating the wait for it N-word. No, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Philip Blair, 20. We couldn't because an anti-imperial member of Congress put an amendment into the Declaration of War against Spain, banning the U.S. from taking Cuba. Puerto Rico wasn't specifically mentioned. Now that's interesting.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. The Spanish American War is like, I know the basics, but I have to admit I've never done the deep dive that it richly deserves, even though I have so much ephemera from the Spanish American War. So many remember the main pins and like, gosh darn you pins. And, with Uncle Sam rolling up his sleeves and beating and all these racist portraits of Spaniards with berets and mustaches getting pounded by a mean Uncle Sam.
Well, there's that. And also, though, Teddy Roosevelt called it a splendid little war.
Well, he was a very aggressive, hyper-masculine dude.
Very much so. I'm sure he just had the time of his life.
He must have been really disappointed by the lack of large game, though, in Cuba.
Well, I mean, the Spanish did have Mauser rifles, which is superior to what the Americans had. They introduced, they found that out at Sam One.
Mm. But you know, we don't remember. We tend not to remember our inferiority. By the way, did you hear this thing about the we could talk about this, and we should get an expert next week to talk about it. But apparently, the United States, its acquisitions, you know, protocol for Pentagon materiel is so weak that basically we are really running out of missiles and bombs, and we have no ability to fulfill those orders to fill the empty armories for at least 3 years. I mean, it's kind of amazing. I mean, you would just think that, like, since militarism is the only thing this country really does and spends money on, you'd think we'd at least have that covered. But apparently we don't even have, as we learned on 9/11, we're not even really good at war.
No. We're good at starting them. We're not particularly good at finishing them. Here lately, we've not been very good at winning them either. So it's just it's just all about making money at this point. It's literally trading lives for profit, which is disgusting.
So let's talk a little bit about Raul Castro. Raul Castro, I think it's safe to say, is never going to see the inside of an American prison cell, right?
I'm not convinced of that. Why couldn't they just Venezuela him? Just go in, grab him?
I think the optics are different because with Maduro, they kind of primed the pump. They the American media portrayed him as a bad man for years after year after year. They they talked about how evil and corrupt the Venezuelan socialist government was. I mean, I don't believe any of these things, but that's what they said. In the case of Raul Castro, most Americans don't have Cuba on their radar, and they never had Raul Castro on their radar. I would be shocked if 5% of the American public could tell you who Raul Castro even was. And then
most
the number
Americans
of people
can tell you where Iran is, and yet here we are.
Right, but I mean, true, but I mean, people, but with Iran, I mean, I'm going to push back on that. People have been primed against Iran ever since 1979, when we were told about the evil Ayatollahs, and the propaganda has, you know, flowed fast and thick ever since the late 70s. So, I mean, you know, Russia, Iran, North Korea, these are all in popular culture and in the media as, you know, American bete noirs for the purpose of our propaganda machine. But Cuba, not really.
I saw Red Dawn. I saw Red Dawn.
That's not Cuba.
I know. The Cubans were there. They invaded too. The Cubans helped.
Only the Soviet Union.
No, the North Koreans, the Cubans, and the Soviet Union invaded. You need to go listen. You need to go back and rewatch Red Dawn because
need to watch it again. You're right.
You are 100% wrong. Also,
is it as bad as I remember? Because I remember not thinking it was very good.
Oh, I think I only saw it once when I was a teenager. I thought it was disgusting. I never watched it again, and it was so bad it burned into my brain.
I thought it. I mean, also, you know, again, I tried to forget this as much as possible. But is it fair to do they invade in Colorado? Is that what happens?
Yeah, they get parachuted. So the Cubans get parachuted into Colorado, and then they kill a high school teacher. That's where the Wolverines were going to school at. They were at school. They were the Wolverines.
It's like a Boy Scout patrol name.
Yeah. So it's just completely stupid. And I mean,
Colorado.
Yeah, and one thing, you know, you mentioned that the propaganda that we get from the Israeli lobby about Iran. Fair enough. I concede that point. However, we've been actively blocked.
The Israelis, I mean, you know, with like, hey, my fellow political cartoonists, everybody, they've been doing anti-Iran shit for, you know, almost 50 years. It's been crazy.
Sure. Well, look at how long we've been blockading Cuba. Yeah. We've been demonizing Cuba, calling them communists. Do you remember the scandal that Obama caused when he went and watched a baseball game with Fidel?
Yep.
I mean, to say that Cuba has been treated with kid gloves by American popular opinion is kind of a disservice to what's been going on to them.
I wouldn't say that, but I'd say, like, once Fidel was dead, there wasn't the ability to personalize the hatred of Cuba the way that there was. Like, it's sort of like with Ayatollah Khomeini. When he died, it wasn't the same. You know what I mean? Like, it's like Kim Jong-il was like, had more oomph than Kim Jong-un as an object of hatred.
Well, Kim Jong-un is a soft, fat, effeminate guy with a daughter who looks like someone hit her in the face with a shovel. So,
who's going to be the dictator, apparently.
I don't think so. I think that his sister will take her out.
Do you think look at, killed the way that they supposedly kill each other in
PRK,
putting her in a room and blowing her to pieces with anti-aircraft shells?
No, I don't think I'll do it. I think that she'll just have a meeting, a sit down with her aunt. So, okay, I understand that daddy's been grooming you for this. However, daddy doesn't have a say. I'm going to be taking you over now. You be a good little girl and you just sit here. And it's just going to be interesting to see, how this is going to work. Because I'm assuming it's a dynastic dictatorship. They have to get married and have kids in order to continue the line. So that might be the only family in Korea having children. So it'll just be interesting to see how that works. Because if you're a high-ranking North Korean military official, because you'll need the military behind you, will you feel safer with the sister or with the daughter who looks like she got drop-kicked by a mule?
I have to say either would not be a very – neither would be a pleasant prospect, right? Okay, so let's see. We have
yes, I am very jealous of Kim.
In what way?
Oh, PhD Nick Rivers on YouTube said I'm jealous of Kim. I would like to have my own country. But personally, I would prefer Saipan. If I was going to be the dictator of someplace with a median temperature of 80 degrees year-round, sandy white beaches, very, very pleasant people, low crime rate.
You could become maybe, if they would have you, Nauru. I don't know if you saw the piece I sent. Nauru is changing the name of its country to Nauru. And so it's more in keeping with the language that they speak there instead of the old colonial name.
But isn't Nauru sinking, though?
Is it what, Satan?
Sinking.
It's sinking. Yeah, for sure. Well, it's not sinking. The oceans are rising. I don't think it's actually, yeah.
That's the distinction of the difference.
That's true.
It's going to turn to a sandbar.
The end result is exactly the same. Okay. Okay, Adam Tube, thanks. Question. Chinese cheaper and better vehicles are making their way into the U.S. through Canada. Reliable trucks and SUV for half of the price tags. Why is everything so overpriced? The wrong exceptionalism. I mean, that's a complicated... I mean, it's maybe not a complicated question, but it's a complicated set of answers, right? I mean, things are overpriced for a variety of reasons. I mean, we basically don't have enough manufacturing here in the United States for there to be enough economies of scale to develop, to make cars more affordable. I mean, we are now at a point now where the median new automobile in the United States costs $50,000. 20 years ago, it was $22,000. Now, I guarantee you nobody's wages have increased at the same percentage of increase, right, during that time period. So cars have become definitely unaffordable, and it's very appealing. Believe me, when I hear about these Chinese electric cars, I'm like, I want me one. They sound really good, except for the fact that there's no charging stations anywhere. So that's kind of a problem. You could just do it at home, I guess, assuming that they'll sell you that. We don't have as long as you have internationalization, you're going to have, and you live in a high price Western country, you're going to, your stuff is going to be expensive. In other countries, things are going to seem cheaper. I mean, it's not really, these things are not, they're completely subjective, like, too expensive, too cheap. I mean, I want Americans to make stuff and be able to make a profit and pay their workers decently. That means we have to pay for that, right? At the same time, maybe the profit margins for these corporations is too big.
Listen, if I was single, I would 100% move to Siberia. Just give myself a little piece of land, live out in the woods. Now you hear my wife, what'd you say? You're not single. I say, no, I'm not single, baby. I'm saying if I was. y'all hear this abuse?
Have you seen any of these YouTube videos of dudes who live by themselves in Siberia? There's all these guys, and they're like living with like their pet wolves, their pet bears, like all together. Of course, they all have a passel of foxes. They don't care at all about the fact that it's 55 degrees below zero. It's totally like, it's all good. We have vodka. I don't know how you have vodka, but, you know, where's the store? But, yeah.
I guess just make your own. Yeah, GV, man, this is just like living in Montana. I mean, Kazakhstan, I've been looking at it. That looks like the Montana of Central Asia.
It does, yeah. Yeah, it's very similar landscape.
I mean, listen, I mean, I could just go someplace, you know, get one of those visas that Vladimir's putting out, you know, for Westerners trying to go to Russia to escape cultural persecution. Go there, get a little farmstead, have a bunch of foxes, get myself a pet bear, and
you'd look cute with your pet bear. Hey, listen, you know, we should, for TMI, we had talked about, and then we forgot to do this. We should, you know, taking calls on Rumble Studio. We could do that.
Yeah, sure. Oh, 100%.
Should we try doing it in the next hour?
Yeah, I mean, why not? Let's figure it out.
Yeah, what else do we have to do, right? Okay, all right. So, yay. Okay. So, all right, let's talk. Let's move over. I don't know if you had a chance, Robbie, to see this. I'm sure you did. But Israel's security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, waved his Israeli flag and taunted and abused rows of zip-tied international participants in that aid flotilla that was intercepted by the IDF in international waters in the Mediterranean Sea. They were trying to challenge or protest, more accurately, Israel's blockade of Gaza. Anyway, they were brutalized by these IDF thugs, beaten around, including women, on an Israeli government video posted to an official Israeli government social media website. You see all of these peaceful protesters lined up, face down, being beaten around, their hands zip-tied as the Israeli national anthem blasts over speakers. There was international condemnation. One of the victims here, I think, is the sister of the president of Ireland. I mean, these are not nobodies. Not that that should make a difference, but, you know, it does. Even Benjamin Netanyahu criticized Ben-Gvir and said, you know, this is not what Israel is all about. This is not us. And thank you for inspiring, you know, giving me a cartoon idea for this week, for next week. I mean, I love that whole idea, like when, you know, the United States, like, condemns, for example, the atrocities at Abu Ghraib or right. Guantanamo and says, well, that's not us. And I'm like thinking, but it is us it is you by definition, right? Because you're doing it and you are, and if it wasn't you, Ben-Gvir would be in handcuffs right now on his way to The Hague to be turned over for prosecution for war crimes, including, you know, violating the Geneva Conventions. You're not allowed to display or mock prisoners of war, right? So it is you. It's absolutely you. It's like, so maybe there's some theoretical version of you that disapproves or would disapprove of the real you, who actually does these things and is okay with it and reelects these people and promotes them to big, well-paid jobs funded by the taxpayers. But I don't understand that conceit, like, you know, it's not you. No, the U.S. is systemic racism and torture and wars of choice and genocide. Like, that's us. That's our deal. That's what Israel is. It's like not against Israel's values. It's totally in keeping with Israel. Those are Israel's values.
But yeah, I mean, it's just like saying, no, you can't be, no, Iran, you cannot be blockading us. Meanwhile, we're blockading Cuba. I mean, the hypocrisy is pretty outstanding. And as far as Ben-Gvir goes, there's this blog that I subscribe to because I like contrarian indicators. It's called The Pulse of Israel. And you can imagine what it's about. It's about the pulse of Israel. It's these Israelis, they live in Judea, occupied Palestine. Talk about how the Israelis should not be attacking Ben Gvir. They should be celebrating him for standing up to the world in a way that Benjamin Netanyahu is too soft and weak to do. So, yeah. I mean, that's a good snapshot. People don't realize this. Netanyahu is a moderate.
That's true.
I know it's true. I read their stuff. But you can point out their own literature. You can post their own screenshots, and you get called, you know, that's anti-Semitic. It's like, dude, it's literally what you said. These are your words. It's like, that's racist. It's like, yes, I agree. It's racist. You're a racist dick. It's like, no, what I said is not racist. It's racist that you said it. It's like, but I didn't say it. I mean, that's the game that they're playing here. And I do think that there's a solid chance that that BB might find himself at the happy end of a lost election to Ben Gvir, because I think that he is wrapping it up. You know, just the political alignment there in Israel. They want a fascist, and Netanyahu just isn't fashioning hard enough.
And I mean, the Knesset just voted to, I believe, just as we were going on the air, I was reading that the Knesset, we talked about this on the show, last week, I believe it was, that the Knesset was about to dissolve parliament. And because the governing coalition led by Netanyahu is falling apart due to Netanyahu's desire to subject the ultra-Orthodox to the draft, something that they don't want to do, and they're part of his ruling coalition. So Netanyahu may well be out exactly for the reason that you say, Robbie, for being too reasonable, too soft. Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about what they said.
Well, this is the least
stable person.
Well, it's analogous to the situation in Afghanistan, where the government is the Taliban, and then you have groups like ISIS Khorasan, who they're complaining that the Taliban are not Muslim enough, not Sharia enough. They're too pussy, too pro-Western. They're not hardcore. They're like, these Taliban guys, they got to go. They're weak.
Yeah. I mean, I pissed some people off the other day whenever I mentioned that, you know, under Sharia law, if you convert from Islam, it's off with your noodle. Like, you're done. And people are like, Robbie, that's not true. Like, no, it's true.
Well, it depends on Sharia. Sharia law is subject to interpretation, right?
But if you're going to take the text literally, so if you think that the Taliban are too soft, like if they're compromising on values, then if Ahmad converts to something else, Ahmad's going to have a very short lifespan, and he's going to lose about 7 inches off of his total height, maybe more.
No, that's true. Yeah, although they're really partial in Afghanistan, they're more into stoning than into beheadings.
I just fear they'd just shoot you.
No, I mean, you know, I've don't seen make it,
they want to make you feel stonings. It, huh?
They're more into that. It's a you know, there's not a lot of movies. There's not that much entertainment. So,
I can see that. I mean, if you're gonna go medieval, go medieval.
Love you, Rob. Bye.
Love you too, babe. Bye.
Medieval is their thing. All right, so.
Y'all are getting a snapshot of life here at the West household this morning.
Indeed. Manchild, thanks so much for the $2. Netanyahu admitted that Ben Gvir's thuggery is not in line with Israel's values. Seems rich coming from a doucher whose values are already in the shitter. Sorry for being poor, LOL. Heil Satan.
I can see it.
Chris Thomas J. If you didn't believe Robbie was married to a black woman, now you will.
It is true. Love you too, Ray. I appreciate it, brother. But not in a homoerotic way. Sorry.
John D. Cockefeller. Remember that video of IDF soldiers and Orthodox Jews crying and huddling in a shelter during the Iranian bombing? I do. And I had so much sympathy for them. A little bit. But I was just like, I mean, like, you guys do this to so many other people all the time, and you approve of it when it happens, and you don't care. when about anyone else's emotions. And that's all cool. Like, you're a martial people, like you're, you know, you're surrounded by enemies, you're beleaguered, you've got to fight off all the Arabs, you live in a bad neighborhood, everyone hates you. All right, I get that. But then you can't expect everyone else, you can't play the super emotion card. Like, you know, every time, like, you know, you get a mosquito bite. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, you can't do, it's like, they must be really confused. Why does no one care? No one cares. You know, you set that up that way. That was you.
Well, you know what it is? Honestly, I think what it is that the Israelis look at the Irish and a lot of the other countries in Europe. And in a lot of ways, I think they have the same opinion about them that I do, is that they're not real countries. You don't have an economy. You don't have a military. You don't have a say. You occupy this geographic landmass. You don't control your borders. You have mass immigration. You have all these problems. And you don't get to lecture us about your perceived values. And if you do want to lecture us, that's fine. We're going to ignore you because there's nothing you can do about it, because you're a weak, pathetic excuse of a country masquerading as a nation state. I really do think that's where, I think, honestly, that's where this comes from. Just seriously, what is Ireland going to do? If they did this to the sister of the Irish president, what is Ireland going to do? Send a strongly worded email? Do you think the Israelis care about that? Not one bit. Like, it's just like Luxembourg. Luxembourg, find your behavior atrocious. Okay, and do something about it.
Well, I mean, look, Israel does care about it. I mean, they care about what the American people think of them. If they're not enough really to do anything that we want them to do, but they do, they would like us to change our minds favorably so that the money keeps flowing and the support keeps flowing. We keep running interference for them at the UN.
Well, but that's the point. I mean, you don't need to worry about some little island that believes that it's a country. If you have one of the three superpowers, I mean, they just bought a congressional seat. They own Congress. They own the president. They own the American government. Are they? But what? In what world would they give a single solitary flying flip whatsoever about what Ireland thinks? Well, they don't.
Okay, but you know, maybe they, and obviously they don't. But let's face it, Ireland has, you know, has serious pull among
where?
People all around the world.
With what?
Who respect the fact their struggle for independence against the Brits.
Ted, you're off the reservation there, brother. Ireland ain't got no pool. The only thing Ireland has...
Moral authority. It does.
The only thing Ireland has right now is a bunch of African immigrants who are taking over Dublin. That's all they've got. I mean, seriously, that is all they've got.
Now, it has moral authority for the struggle against Britain. It just does.
Okay, then great. Then why are they replacing their population with foreigners?
All right, that's a different question.
No, it's a relative question.
Israelis aren't giving any thought to the migration into Ireland. They're just not.
No, listen. Let me make this point here. Then we'll go on. You got to remember, Israel is
We've got to finish this Ben Gavir story because I do.
This ties into it.
Let's cross a line, you know.
Well, it does and it doesn't. If you are a ethnostate, believe that you are chosen by God to be able to control this territory, that you have a biblical mandate, that means you're a militaristic society that's locked down and controlled. You then want to expand that territory because of reasons that your God, Rimfan, told you were able to have all this time ago. And because you're an ethnostate, you look over what's happening in the West, where you have these weak shells of countries who are going to lecture you, who can't control their own borders, who are being invaded by migrants on a daily basis. Do you honestly think Ben Gavir, who is a arch racist thug and a prick who should be dropped out of an airplane, is going to care what the president of Ireland says when he can't even control his own borders on an island to the west of Britain? He does not care about Ireland. He doesn't care what the Brits say.
No, I mean, that's very clearly true. I think the question is not about Ben-Gavir personally.
It's about the society.
If it's the question is really about Israel writ large, right? I mean, we see atrocity after atrocity. You know, I'm not going to enumerate them coming committed by Israel because we don't have time enough time left in the show. But here's the latest one, right? Where it's like you have peaceful protesters, you kidnap them in international waters, right?
Sure.
Where you have no jurisdiction whatsoever. You kidnap these people. You're basically, mm-hmm. that's an act of piracy. You brutalize them. Mm-hmm. They are pacifists. And you do it, then you brag about it, violating the Geneva Conventions, mm-hmm. On an international forum, on the official X feed of the Israeli government. I mean, at what point does someone say, at long last, sir, have you no decency? Or does that point just never come? I mean, you know, this is intolerable behavior, and intolerable behavior is supported for a long time until it's not. What will it take for the U.S. to, I mean, you can already see Israeli standing in the polls, you know, at record lows, continues to fall. It's only going to keep falling. You know, at what point
did explain Massey's defeat yesterday?
Yeah, we haven't hit the end of Israel's influence on American politics as demonstrated.
No, they got the boomers. And to answer your question, I mean, what you're saying, listen, I agree with you. Israel is a repugnant state. That's one of the reasons why people call me a racist sometimes, because I am staunchly anti-Israel. It is an apartheid racist state that should not exist. It does not have a right to exist. It lost that. It never had the right to begin with. And it sure as hell doesn't have the right to exist now because of stuff that they're doing, like what they're doing right now. The question is, you have this authoritarian population that has this ethnic superiority complex who's sticking their middle finger up at Europeans who are too weak to control their borders. When they do this, the Europeans squawk, and then Israel says, okay, fine, I hear you. What are you going to do about it? The answer is nothing. So if the answer is you're not going to do anything, your opinion does not matter. Well, it's just like if you have a kid. If you have a teenager, which you do, well, you did. Now he's grown, but let's just assume that you had another teenager. If you kept telling your teenage son, hey, please remember to come in before 9 o'clock. That's your curfew. And he consistently comes in at 11 o'clock. And you ask him why. He says, because I want to. And you say, oh, okay. Who runs the house, you or him?
Yeah, obviously him.
There you go. That's what's happening here. Until Israel gets punched in the face,
yeah,
this is going to continue. And there's no one going to punch Israel in the face. Nazi Germany was not defeated by the Buddhists.
No.
There's a reason for that. It's because Buddhists are pacifists. Pacifism does not work against an authoritarian military state.
And what people don't realize is that Tibet, Buddhist country, was impenetrable for many, many years, not because they were peaceful people, because they were a very violent people who arrested and tortured to death any interloper. You can look it up. It's true.
Oh, for sure. People are tribal.
For their public tortures. My favorite was the block of ice that you were forced to stand upon. Spikes sticking into your neck. And as the ice melted, you know. So last question about this incident involving the Gaza flotilla activists. Part of me is disgusted by passivity/pacifism. I'm just going to admit that. It's part of the reason that I got out of the activism business. I wanted to see someone scream, fuck you, and fighting back against these IDF assholes. Now, I know, I realize that, like, they have guns and you don't.
But you'd be called racist, Ted. And being called racist is the worst thing that can happen to a European. What do you mean I'm a racist? What do you mean? Just because you're starving a population, you're engaged in a genocide, you're blockading them, I'm going to try and go and bring international attention to this issue. And you zip tie me. You tie me up. That's not the humiliation. The humiliation is that you call me a racist.
Well,
that's how weak Europeans are.
To me, it's also like, why aren't you screaming? You're being videotaped. Why aren't you thrashing? Why aren't you fighting?
Because they're pussies, Ted. They are really pussies. They're pussies. If it was you or me, we'd be fighting. I would be calling them every kind of word. I would be insulting them. You don't see anti-Semitic, by God, I will show you. Christ is king, baby. And I mean, I would just full on unleash. But that's not the Europe that we have now. Europe used to be a militaristic, very warlike, very violent place where people understood the concept of nationalism and borders and defending what's yours and standing up for this thing called laws. Europe now is a shadow. It is a shell. It is occupied. It is a joke. There are no real countries there. It sucks. Let's call it what it is.
I just have to say, I hate militant pacifism. I think it's like there's a place for pacifism in protest. I think it's maybe even the main place for protest. But a protest movement that says, I will confront ultra-violence with nothing but pacifism and nothing but passivity is doomed and inherently impotent. There should at least be the possible threat of violence. These IDF thugs should know they might get bitten. Something bad might happen. You think about Jewish heroes. There's a, I forget her name, but there was a, I think she was a singer or an actor, some kind of performer. She arrived in Auschwitz and she was ordered to disrobe. And she famously sort of did a little, she was very attractive. She did a kind of a little strip tease to distract the SS guys, then stole one of their pistols and shot a few of them before she was killed. Yeah. That's the way to go.
That's what you need. And that, yeah. I mean, that's the problem. If there's a time and a place for nonviolent protest, 100% right there with you. That should be the default setting. But there comes a point where it just doesn't work anymore.
I think the flotilla people would have had every right to open fire on the IDF when they showed up.
100%.
Okay. All right. Well, we're in agreement there. Okay. So the House Democrats look like they're about to get today a positive vote on the War Powers Act. As you know, the Iran war has now been has surpassed by at least 10 days the 60-day deadline for the president to go to Congress and get approval for deployment of the military, in this case, against Iran. The House Democrats now have enough Republicans to cross over and join them and get that vote. President Trump can, of course, and will veto that. But there's a general feeling on the part of the House Democrats and Congress in general that this is a huge rebuke, and that it would have a lot of symbolic resonance to have Congress issue a formal statement that Trump is violating the War Powers Act in his very unpopular war at Israel's side against Iran, which he is losing. I don't know if I have a feeling you're going to agree with me on this, but I don't know that I really think that symbolic resonance goes far enough here.
No, it doesn't. It does not. It's just bad. It's just bad. I don't really know what else to say about it. It's dumb.
Look, I guess it's good that they did it. It's sad that they can't get a veto-proof supermajority. I don't know what the Senate will do. It looks like the Senate will probably go along with it. But it's the House of Representatives that determines this. I just don't see any sign that Congress, I'm writing a column this week, which is going to go out later today, for Creator Syndicate, where I'm going to be talking about how if Congress is this impotent, they should do a resignation en masse and let you run the country this way, you can run it without us. We all quit. I looked it up back in the 90s. The entire parliament of Bangladesh felt that it was being abused and cheated in elections by the ruling party. So the parliament walked out, the minority party. And basically for 2 years, there was a political crisis. But in the end, the pressure built internationally. There was no legitimacy for the government, and they had to ultimately compromise and redo their election system to make things more fair. And ultimately, the party that walked out came to power, I believe, in 1996. That is, you know, I mean, at a certain point, what are Democratic members of Congress even doing but twiddling their thumbs and watching, you know, Trump burn down Rome?
I mean, what's Congress doing at all? And a big thank you to SneakerDad1020 over on YouTube for a $100 donation.
Wow.
Being unable to defend your stance doesn't make you a pacifist. It makes you harmless. That's my point.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not a pacifist, and I'm also not in favor of violence. I mean, the reason that I oppose the regime, the reason I oppose capitalism is precisely because they are so violent. So that's not the issue for me. The issue for me is that if you're confronting extremely violent people or an extremely violent system, you are not likely to get very far through pacifism alone. And I've had this discussion with people on the left, like my friend David Swanson, who I respect. He's a pacifist theorist and writer. Great guy, very nice guy. But, you know, I have not, this is the challenge I make to all leftists, right? Please show me one radical transformation, a revolution that's ever been nonviolent. You can't.
And by a revolution, think of one.
I mean the replace of one class of rulers by another. I mean, a Marxist style revolution, not an independence struggle, not, you know, something like that, but like where the actual system changes. Like
I can only think of one in history, the Glorious Revolution in Great Britain back in the 1600s.
Wasn't there?
There was no violence. The king abdicated. I mean, the monarchy existed. So, I mean, no, you can make the case that that the monarchy existed. It wasn't overthrown, but there wasn't a civil war. There wasn't widespread just chaos and destruction. That's why it's called the Glorious Revolution.
Yeah, no, look, okay, so I'm looking this up. The Glorious Revolution of 1688 was largely bloodless in England, but far from peaceful. The deposing of King James II in favor of William of Orange triggered brutal, deadly conflicts in Scotland and Ireland. In Ireland, there was the Jacobites fought against Williams at the Battle of the Boyne in 1690, significant loss of life.
And they got wiped out.
In Scotland, there was the massacre of Glencoe in 1692, where government forces slaughtered members of the MacDonald clan for delaying their allegiance to the new monarchs. It's also, I would say, the system didn't change in the Glorious Revolution, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was still a monarchy. But I mean,
a revolution doesn't make it a revolution. The American Revolution isn't a revolution, even though it's called that.
I think that when King John I was forced to sign the Magna Carta, you could say that was a revolution because that did force a change of the system.
Well, that's a reform in the system, but the system itself remained in place.
Yeah, but a reform and a change is still the same thing.
No, but when I'm talking about a revolution, I mean that the system is replaced by something new entirely.
And kind of like what the French tried to do.
Ever.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, if you're going to try and overthrow the state, then the state's going to fight back. But I mean, it just depends on what is you're trying to do. Are you trying to just completely decapitate it, or are you trying to get some reforms through?
Yeah, reforms.
That's the difference.
And reforms might be achievable through not purely nonviolent means, but I think it's very hard.
Well, we're seeing that right now.
Yeah.
And that's why pacifism doesn't work. I mean, you can't have a self-governing society if the government doesn't fear the people.
True. War Powers Act, what do you think?
It's unconstitutional. It should be abolished. Only Congress can levy war. I mean, I don't know why this is controversial. And I get into this all the time with right-wingers.
The Constitution couldn't be clearer.
The Constitution clearly says that Congress has the authority to wage war, not the presidency. Why do we have a Congress at this point? She said, what do they do except draw a salary? What is the purpose? What do? They have hearings. They sit in their rooms. They get rich off their insider trading, and they do nothing. It's like the Roman Senate. It has no power. It's symbolic.
Yeah, they are worthless. So that's the word before.
Yeah, yes, they are. We do have some questions. Let's get through them before we.
All right, I'm going to see if I can hit the stream while I'm doing that. Let's see what happens here. But hold on. Go ahead and deal with the question.
You don't have to hit the screen. You don't have to hit it.
No, I got to hit it.
No, you don't.
I'm doing the timer.
No, you don't have to. Because we'll just, once you're right over, we'll just go live. It's fine. We don't need the timer.
Nah, it's all right. I'm still doing it. I think a timer helps. All right.
Fine, Ted. Yeah. Fine. I'm trying to help y'all. We don't need a timer on TMI. We just go right over, hit the switch, and we get there. But Ted is just, as y'all can see, he is more conservative than I am when it comes to the timer on the TMI show. And this is how it's always been. It must stay.
That's true.
We're so bad. Okay, so let's see here. So Philip Blair, 20. Let me see here. Israel's values are now, our values are under, were our values under Andrew Jackson. I agree with that, except for the banking part. Remember that, and then from John D. Cockefeller, remember that video of IDF soldiers and Orthodox Jews crying and hugging in a shelter during the Iranian bombing? I do. How dare they shoot back at us?
We did that comment already.
Oh, did we? I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
there we go. We got some TMI music going. Y'all hear it right here, boys and girls.
Yeah, that's quite all right.
Then Mechanet Bilkins, 7422 on YouTube, says, Robbie, doesn't the Bible say the man is supposed to provide for his immediate family, yet your wife it's your wife that goes to work every day? Actually, my wife and me both go to work every day. I'm at work right now. This is my job.
True.
This is what I do.
And raking with the filthy lucre.
Yes. And specifically, the verse that you're referring to is 1 Timothy 5:8. But if any provide not for his own household, specifically for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel, which I completely agree. There's nothing worse than a sorry man who will not provide for, that includes protect your family.
Yep. Well, fair. Okay. And with that, it's 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern time, which means it's the end of today's TMI show. By the way, no TMI show live tomorrow. It's going to be recorded only.
Yeah, I'm putting together a supercut.
Yeah. So we'll be back on with a live show. What are we doing Monday? Nothing, right?
Yeah, Monday. Friday and then Monday, I'm just going to put together just a couple of supercuts. I might just run the same one twice. I don't know. Figure it out. That's what we're going to do.
All right. So TMI is in abeyance until Tuesday of next week. Manila has been back and forth on whether or not she's going to be back on Tuesday. We shall see.
She needs to come back. Listen, this whole baby thing, that's just an excuse at this point.
Yeah, it's like, I'm a parent. Children are the future. They need love.
I'm so tired.
I'm tired because I can't sleep at all ever.
but yet women should have equal voting rights to men, even though they're always crying about how tired that they are.
Just because they work all the time and do everything. I mean,
just because you grow a baby doesn't mean that you get the right to vote. Come on.
Just because you create life. Like, who the hell are you? All right. Anyway, so hopefully Manila will be back on Tuesday. If not Tuesday, sometime next week. We will keep you posted on that. DMZ America podcast coming up at 11 a.m. today. Stay tuned for TMI with Robbie sitting in for Manila right now. And Deprogram will be back tomorrow morning. Bye. And thank you for your support. Ciao.
Bye, y'all.